When I said recently that the dam isn't breaking, it's broken, I wasn't kidding. You would all be familiar with this story recently that came from Rebecca Barnett. World first Australian local government calls for suspension of COVID mRNA vaccines. That was Port Hedland Council. And the wonderful Councillor Adrian McRae came on with me on Media Blackout recently to discuss this historic motion. Well, Dr. Julie Sladden, who is a councillor of West Tamar Council, just announced that her council is planning on bringing a similar motion. Some of you may have already seen that video on my socials, but I really, really want to play that for you. Let's take a look.
Hi, I'm Julie Sutton, councillor for West Tamar Municipality in Tasmania.
I'd like to think that this motion tonight will be the ripple that creates a bigger wave across the country and perhaps across the world.
On the 11th of October 2024, a historic motion was passed by the town of Port Hedland Council in Western Australia.
I'm now put to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? Motion's carried.
In the motion, Council acknowledged the disturbing report of DNA contamination found in Australian vials of COVID-19 mRNA vaccines, reported by virologist Dr. David Speaker, as highlighted by the Honourable Russell Broadbent MP in a letter to the Prime Minister in September 2024.
The letters called for an immediate suspension of COVID-19 mRNA vaccines pending an urgent investigation into report contamination and significant safety concerns.
This letter was countersigned by over 50 doctors, scientists, and academics. Amongst other actions, the Town of Port Hedland Council agreed to write to every council in Australia, including mine, informing them of this report and highlighting the need for local councils and healthcare providers to be made aware of the concerns.
I think this presents a real and undeniable threat to public health. The contamination has been extensively documented.
The initial DNA contamination findings were first reported in early 2023 by scientist Kevin McKernan.
What I want to talk to you today is about the DNA contamination that our team at Medicinal Genomics discovered in the mRNA vaccines.
And have since been confirmed by at least five independent laboratories who have reportedly tested over 50 vials from 27 different batches.
The Pfizer vaccine is contaminated with plasmid DNA. I know this is true because I sequenced it in my own lab.
Der Impfstoff verunreinigt ist, nämlich mit Plasmid-DNA.
We now have people in Germany, Japan, and France who have seen this DNA contamination.
In addition, the disturbing finding of the SV40 promoter sequence in the Pfizer vaccine.
We now know the EMA, the FDA, and Health Canada have all admitted that the Pfizer vaccines have an SV40 sequence in them
has generated significant discussion in the scientific community.
SV40 sequence should not have been there, wasn't declared to the regulator, and any bit of DNA that says make me has a potential, hypothetically, of causing cancer.
Scientists and doctors, including pathologists and oncologists and specialists in the field of genomics, are deeply concerned about the potential health implications of these findings.
Synthetic DNA contamination, as detected in Australian vials of the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines, presents risks of a genomic instability which can manifest as cancers, immune disorders, and hereditary diseases.
Far more than rates, roads, and rubbish, local government councils have responsibilities to our communities in terms of health and well-being.
There's been some statements made about the responsibility of local government. Why we would be, looking at something like this. We do have a responsibility when it comes to health.
Under the Tasmanian Local Government Act 1993, the council has a duty to respond to public health concerns. Section 20 describes the function and powers of councils to include to provide for the health, safety and welfare of the community, to represent the interests of the community, and to provide for the municipal area's peace, order and good government. The discussion of DNA contamination issue falls within the responsibilities of local government by these measures.
We have the evidence in our hands, detailed reports from leading experts, and we are asking for immediate, decisive action.
In short, we have a duty of care as elected members to acknowledge the information and advocate for the community by asking questions and seeking clarification from our leaders and relevant authorities. To this end, I will be bringing a motion to West Tamar Council on Tuesday, the 19th of November, 2024. The motion acknowledges the serious concerns raised and underscores the Council's responsibility to stay updated on public health matters affecting our community and reinforcing our concern and our commitment to provide transparent, evidence-based information on issues affecting community health and well-being. Thank you.
Well, I certainly think that this is someone that the Australian people and all over the world need to hear from. So Councillor and Dr. Julie Sladden is joining us after this short break. Don't go anywhere. With so much uncertainty in financial markets, many people are turning to lasting assets like gold and silver. Some of you may have heard the story where I recently went to a farmer's market and was told by the farmer that he will accept payment in gold or silver. I couldn't have been happier because this means people are learning, but it also means people are realizing the dire straits we're in where the fiat market is concerned. Our partners at Gold Bullion Australia Group are Australia's leading dealer of gold and silver bullion. With over 40 years' experience, this family-owned Aussie business is one that you can trust to tailor their service to your personal circumstances. It's never too late to consider securing your wealth with the proven, time-tested strategy of precious metals such as gold and silver until it's too late. Don't wait. Head to the link in the description to visit our trusted partners at Gold Bullion Australia Group or give them a call on 1-800-754-602 today and let them know Maria Z sent you. Dr. Julie Sladden, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me on, Maria. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful and I'm so honoured and I was incredibly, incredibly encouraged by the video that you put out to the Australian people, notifying of your intention to bring forward a similar motion to what we saw in Port Hedland. Just talk people through how you became aware of this and what your concerns are.
Well, my journey with the whole what's been discovered in the vaccines with regards to the vaccines, I've actually been looking into this for the last year and a half or so when I first heard that Kevin McKernan had found DNA contamination in his samples. And a colleague of mine, Julian Gillespie, sent me this information. And I got to say that I didn't sleep for about a month when I was, you know, pondering what this might all mean. So I've been writing about this in various places, you know, The Spectator online and Daily Declaration and Brownstone, just, you know, about these findings and, you know, what might it mean and, you know, what we need to do next. Because as a medical doctor, you know, we have to ask questions, we have to have open scientific debate. And that is probably one of the things that I've just been pushing for the whole way along.
Right, open scientific debate being the key point here, because that's the opposite of what we saw during the COVID era. You know, anyone that sort of didn't agree with what the government was saying was silenced, and that is the opposite of science. It's, we just need to be more open about these things. So you're also a doctor and a counsellor. How you mentioned in your video how the councils actually do have a responsibility towards public health, you know, far beyond rates, roads and rubbish. And we saw councils taking action during COVID per government advice, shutting down certain play areas and things of this nature. So how does the council's responsibility actually come in here?
Yeah, well, that, yeah, 100% right. You know, health of the community, it affects all levels of government. So all levels of government are actually responsible for, you know, various aspects of public health. But there's also this overarching responsibility. And as local government, we're also closest to the people. So, you know, we're closest to the grassroots people. So we have a responsibility to advocate as well for our local community, especially, you know, when there's something that is so significant that's potentially affecting their health. So if we had a problem with the water quality, we'd be advocating to our state and federal government about that, you know. So I see this whole issue is in the same way. I mean, indeed, my council actually, you know, involved in the community immunisation program, not for COVID as far as I know, but, you know, just with normal sort of scheduled immunisation. So this is very much falls into our remit. And when you see something that's actually affecting so many members of the community, and here's the thing, really, you don't need to talk to somebody for very long now before you they tell you about someone who's been adversely affected by the COVID jab. So I really think, you know, we need to seriously be looking at, well, what exactly is going on in our community and what do we need to be doing to advocate for them?
That is so wonderful. And I'm just so encouraged by your words. Talk to us about this motion similar to what was brought forward in Port Hedland. I recently had Councillor Adrian McRae on one of our other broadcasts, Media Blackout. You know, that went out to millions of people online. It's a really, really big broadcast on X, and people around the world are very encouraged by what Australia is doing. We recently, actually, before we get into that, I just want to show everyone the Idaho Health Board became the first in the US recently to defy the CDC and the FDA by removing the COVID injections from their clinics. So this is due to the health concerns that have been raised and a myriad of health concerns over these injections. So talk to us about what the West Tamar Council motion will look like in comparison to Port Hedland.
Yeah, well, firstly, I just want to salute Councillor Adrian McRae and Milo, can't remember his surname now. These names escape us sometimes off the top of our head, who they brought the motion forward and debated it and held that special meeting. And really it was a watershed moment, I think, and just highlighted how important it was. And the most profoundly impacting part of that meeting was actually the public statements that were given. You know, my heart was breaking for the people who and their stories and things that had happened. I think that really is the tip of the iceberg. So I salute the councillors in Port Hedland, and I know there were a few councillors whose minds were actually changed on the day from what I could tell watching the proceedings. And yeah, so I just thank them for the brave stand that they make, because, you know, it's always the first to go that I think are the most courageous. And I know there are a lot of people working hard in the background to make that happen. So their motion was to write to every single council, obviously to the Prime Minister, and to, you know, back in what Russell Broadbent was saying in his letter, you know, calling for an immediate suspension and investigation of the COVID vaccines. And also, and this was what was most remarkable, to write to every single healthcare practitioner and in their area and all 536 other councils around Australia, which is a lot of councillors. And, you know, I know that they've actually written to every single individual councillor as well. So I think I've had, you know, three correspondences now through various mechanisms. So there's a huge effort involved, and there was a lot of, I think, you know, really good thinking on what to do, because we need to make this information as public as possible. So our council received that, and obviously because I was already aware of what was going on, I met, you know, I've actually had some conversations with councillors in my municipality, and I've been able to talk through what's actually going on ahead of this motion. But my motion really does have an advocacy thrust to it. So basically I'm restating, you know, what it is that we should be doing. We should be advocating for our public health. We should be asking our authorities for clarification about what's going on. And I've also put some letters in there that we'll be writing to the Tasmanian Premier and Health Minister, also the Prime Minister and Health Minister. Also, there's a letter to the TGA, and we will also be writing to, if the motion goes through, every single healthcare practitioner in our municipality. So I think, you know, there's that's the start of our advocacy issue. But I've also asked in the motion that the council be updated every 6 months, so we can keep a watching brief on this, so that we're able to inform the public as we need to.
I think this is wonderful. And the local action, I've sort of always advocated for more local action, because it seems that over the past, you know, few years especially, there's been a real disconnect between senators and MPs even at times and the people, yet they are able to attend council meetings, they are able to voice their concerns. And we've seen some councils even going to extreme measures, such as shutting down their meetings to it seemingly avoid discussions with the public. But it seems that there is a repairing happening, Dr. Slattin, where there is a shift to listening to people's concerns. This is certainly the case where the mis and disinformation bill is concerned. You know, I can say that I rang a senator's office and they were very receptive. And that senator shortly thereafter, I'm not saying it's because of me, they said that they were getting tens of thousands of emails as well as phone calls, and I could hear the phones ringing off the hook in the background. And shortly thereafter, the senator said, I've heard your concerns and I'm not going to support the bill. So we're seeing this shift where there is people are listening to the people in public service are listening to the people. Do you think that this is happening as well across council?
Well, I think it's starting to. I've certainly had, correspondence from other councillors around Australia and also people from within and around Tasmania as well, which, I mean, I've had a lot of that over the last few years as well, because I think I've been fairly outspoken about this issue. So people are actually looking for champions and people to move forward. So, you know, as soon as the politicians look as though they're listening, you know, people are like, you know, they want to tell them their stories. And I think really it is, you know, there have been, you know, obviously a lot of, battles that, you know, Australians have sort of weathered over the last few years. But when you think about it, we're all on the same side. We all actually want the same thing. We all want health, safety, freedom. Essentially, and you know, people are starting to move together with that common purpose. And I think, you know, once we take the fear out of the equation and you realize that we want the same thing, then we can actually start to look at the issues objectively and listen to what the people are saying.
Do you think that this is a common sentiment across council as well?
Across councils in particular, or mine in particular?
Well, yours and councils in general.
Look, I think, you know, there's a mixed level of awareness about, you know, what's going on, but certainly world events over the last, you know, few weeks have certainly given people pause for thought about, you know, what is actually going on. And people, I think, are a little bit more courageous. They're more encouraged about what they've seen happening overseas. And, you know, we're also with the misinformation bill, as you were saying, you know, people are actually becoming more politically active. The public have decided that it's time to actually stand up and you know, even if you've never been interested in politics before. And I was speaking to, I think I made a little clip for my local area, and I said, you know, if you're not interested in politics, this is the clip for you, because, you know, this is really going to affect your life if it goes through, if this bill goes through, whether you like it or not. So we really we owe it to ourselves and to our kids and our grandkids to do something about this.
Yes, I've definitely seen that shift. More and more people are politically activated than they've ever been. Certainly the last 4 years has caused that to erupt. But I think the hope maybe of some people who were orchestrating this entire thing was that people would just go back to normal and forget all about it. But it's been the opposite. I'm finding more and more people are getting involved. Are you personally encouraged by that? What would you say to people who aren't active yet?
Well, yes, I am encouraged by that. I think normally there are people who are always, you know, politically active because they're interested in it. But then I think this has moved a whole group of people who would normally not get involved because they just want to, you know, live their life. And, you know, that's what we're supposed to, it's actually what we're supposed to be doing, you know, living our lives, loving our families, doing our work. Yet this last few years, you know, what has happened to the people really have forced them to stand up and pay attention. And I think now even those who hadn't really sort of been aware of what was going on over the last few years, because they've now seen various things happen around them, whether it be those around them who have been injured, those who've been adversely affected, you know, by mandates and in other ways. I mean, it was the COVID, you know, they called it the Great Reset. Well, I called it the Great Reveal, because it really did reveal to us some mechanisms that were in place that were wholly unhelpful and unhealthy for the community as a whole. And if we want to really, you know, that Australia has that reputation of being having the larrikin lifestyle and be freedom loving, we actually have to fight for that.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why we're seeing a mobilising of the people.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that it's going to be a very, very interesting election season next year. We're already seeing a lot of demands. I recently saw a journalist asking Prime Minister Albanese how what he thinks, and I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially what he thinks about the rising demand for populist leaders, particularly the effects of what happened in the United States, people who actually listen to their constituents rather than just ignoring them. Certainly this was the case where the digital ID bill was concerned. I recall Senator Gallagher saying that a lot of her constituents were very much for this, yet when you looked at the social media response, you were hard pressed to find one single person who wanted this bill. Not putting you on the spot here, Dr. Slattin, to talk about certain political leaders, but my point is that there was an ignoring of the populist demand, and now it seems that is shifting, and I think that more and more people are going to start to be willing to engage with their community. But I'm interested to hear from you about what the best approach is from a council perspective, how people should be communicating with their councillors, because there was a division that was caused by the last 4 years, and I think that's starting to mend. How should people approach issues of concern with their councillors?
Yeah, or just go back to your previous point on the populist view. What really struck me as you were saying that was, I think, the political leaders that ignore what the people are saying, they do that at their peril in Australia. They really need to start listening now. So how to approach this as a council? Look, as I said, I've been writing and advocating about this issue that, there might be something going on, and it looks very likely, like, given the stats that we have, that something is going on with the COVID shots. We have to take a stance of, what is our common ground? And our common ground is that, we all want the best for our people. We all want health. And so our common ground is not to argue the points necessarily about, whether somebody's pro-vax or anti-vax. This isn't about that. This is about being pro anti-harm and pro-choice and pro-good science and pro-open discussion. So we have to take all of that out of it and really be prepared to sit down at the table and have some really uncomfortable discussions about what the actual science is saying, because, the letter that was sent out by the Honourable Russell Broadbent was countersigned by over 50 doctors, scientists and reputable experts around the world. And I can say there are a lot more on that list who weren't on that list, who couldn't get on it in time, because it all was put together, fairly quickly. But there are enough there that you think, well, these discussions need to be happening. So it takes time. It's not something that can be really done overnight. You really have to be prepared to have those conversations. And I think it needs to be a safe space as well. So I've been sort of advocating in Tasmania, which is, my local state, for, as I said, a couple of years. And I've had a fair bit of backlash from that. I stood in the local state election earlier this year. And I got to say, the AMA came out against me very hardly, harshly. I have never, I've never had a black mark against my name. I've never done anything controversial before. And they came out and basically called me dangerous and misleading. Now, we don't have time for those kind of accusations. We actually have to focus on the people. Let's not get involved in throwing insults at people or who's to blame or whatever. Let's actually focus on what's going on with the people's health. If people are being injured, if these shots are as bad as we suspect they might be, they need to be suspended immediately, like Idaho's been very brave in doing. And, I salute them for what they've done. And Florida, I've got to say, the Surgeon General there, Lepardo, I think his name is.
Lepardo,
he's
yes.
Actually stopped. Yeah, he stopped recommending them for people. And there are six states in the US, at least six states, who are actually suing Pfizer, I believe, under civil law for various things. So there's obviously some problems going on. So we actually need to work out how bad are these. We need to stop them and do a full investigation. And let's then find out what's happened to the people, because I don't think you have to look very far to discover the person, how many people around you have actually been adversely affected. And if that's going on, and I don't know about you, Maria, but I've certainly found that the people who have been adversely affected aren't able to get the help they need.
No.
So we actually have a bit of a public health emergency on our hands now, because there are people who are unwell They're not being recognised that they're unwell because of the shots, or, you know, nobody's willing to speak about it, and they can't get the help that they need. So that's not healthcare. So this is why this discussion is so important, and we have to be having it at all levels of government. If it needs to start at the grassroots, local government, then so be it, because I tell you what, we've been banging our heads up against a brick wall over the last couple of years trying to get information out of the TGA. It's like trying to get blood out of a stone, I can tell you.
Yes, you just get a host of redacted documents back from them. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. There's no transparency. And I'm just encouraged by the fact that people haven't given up the fight. I really am. And I believe we'll continue to see that pressure. We've seen a bunch of people who have come out, and this is particularly prevalent in the US, have come out and said, you know, oh, RFK Jr. being appointed at the HHS is going to be terrible. Go get your vaccines now before they're all banned. And it's just not the reality. That's not what's going to happen. But what's going to happen is more transparency. And again, we're still awaiting the sort of final call on the mis and disinfo bill, but it looks like we have enough no votes. If that bill were to go through, there would be no transparency, no scientific discussion. This conversation would be banned. And so I think, you know, the future, as you said, we need to be having more discussion. We need to hear from all opinions. What sort of a flow-on effect do you think that would have in Australia if that kind of discussion is fostered and there's more transparency in the US? How can we model that in Australia?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think what happens in the US will affect what happens over here. And I've heard the commentary around, you know, RFK Jr. being appointed to his position. And I've got to say, you know, he's made it very clear. He's not going to ban all vaccines. He's just going for pro-science. I mean, he's just asking the questions. And what has got to be wrong with that? I mean, it came out in the last 12 within the last year, a paper by Stanley Plotkin et al. And this guy is the grandfather of vaccines, who basically says, oh, we need more funding so that we can do the vaccine safety studies that should have been done, because it turns out that now people are demanding it. There are no long-term placebo-controlled trials for a majority of the vaccines that, well, any, I think, there aren't any of them for any of the vaccines that are on the schedule. And so people are actually starting to ask questions about the whole schedule. So I think having a pro-science, a pro-discussion, a pro-transparency stance is exactly what the people need at the moment. You know, and it's not a blanket ban. It's actually, well, let's get the answers that we're looking for, because we know that people's health is not brilliant at the moment, and we need to be looking at all areas or what's affecting that. And you were talking about the misinformation bill and how that's going to affect, you know, the freedom of speech on all our platforms. I've got to say, I tried to upload my video to YouTube, and it was banned. It was immediately taken down within a couple of minutes under their medical misinformation policy, which I thought was hilarious and tragic at the same time. But fortunately, we have other ways of getting things out here. And I've got to say, I'm very grateful for X being as an open platform as it is. And notably, Facebook didn't take it down. So that's been really encouraging as well. So we have other ways of getting things out. And I think YouTube really need to pay attention, because, you know, a lot of people have just left there because they can't get, you know, things up.
Well, I was looking at some statistics around this, and Rumble achieved, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around 17% of election coverage. 17% of the world was watching Rumble for the election coverage that was being aired there. Now, that Rumble is, for those who don't know, a completely free speech platform. I've never been censored there, as opposed to YouTube, where I've literally had, within seconds of uploading a video, it gets taken down. It's like their AI just sees a particular guest and goes, nope, you can't hear from them. And I just think that that's outrageous. I think that, you know, even if something's wrong, it should be allowed to be discussed, and then the public can decide. We are really tired of being treated like children who can't think for ourselves. And you said something really powerful before, which is the, you know, you talked about the sort of insults that have been, that were, or the labels that have been cast on you. And the Australian people and people all over the world have experienced that, just insults hurled. Even last year during the Voice debate, people being told that they're racist if they have questions. I mean, this simply can't go on. And I think that the appetite of Australians is, I think they're done with the insults. What we're talking about here is a reconciliatory approach, where we, you know, as this you've been saying throughout this conversation, we need science, we need debate, we need speech. And if the misinformation bill went through, we wouldn't have any of that. We need to work together, even with people that we vehemently disagree with. Do you think that we have the ability to bridge that gap, Dr. Slattin? Because I know that there are a lot of doctors in the medical community, let's say, who still treat people who ask questions as though they're just uninformed and stupid, really.
Yeah, and that is disappointing when we see that kind of behaviour. But I think overwhelmingly, you know, people are either misinformed or uninformed or, you know, needing more information. But when you see those insults being thrown, basically, I think, well, that's the lowest form of argument, and I don't really give that a lot of time and thought. Yes, I think this is possible because the people who have been, you know, basically working in this area and fighting this battle, for want of a better word, and I try not to use, like, you know, adversarial kind of speech, because I think we have to move forward with this with a reconciliatory nature if we're going to get the people the help that they need, because basically otherwise they won't, everyone will be fighting, and in the meantime the people are still suffering. You know, we talked about free speech and we talked about transparency in scientific, you know, scientific discourse. But another magic ingredient, if I'm to use that word, would be love. And I always try and approach people. I know that there have been some, you know, extremely some wrong things being done over the last few years. And that'll come out in the wash. The truth always comes to the surface. And that's, you know, something that, you know, other people will be focusing on. But I am more about, you know, approaching these discussions and this discourse with a heart of, okay, I think that the person in front of me is doing the best that they can to understand. Now, if they start throwing insults at me, that's fine. You can hold your opinion. But if you are prepared to sit down and have a discussion with me, then I'm going to listen to your point of view if you'll give me the respect of listening to mine. And I think it's, you know, with that heart that we've got to go in and have these conversations, because if we don't make it a safe space to have the conversations, then it's going to take a lot longer. And we don't have a lot of time. You know, I'm seeing more and more you know, people becoming well, unwell and staying unwell. And I had a local municipal member, a local community member, contact me the other day and said, you know, I had the vaccine, I was severely injured, and then I started, you know, telling my friends and family about it, and then they started calling me an anti-vaxxer. And their heart was broken because they said, you know, I went and had it, and I've always had my vaccines. And for me too, I was called an anti-vaxxer. I've always had my vaccines. I just didn't have this one. So, you know, and I think there's a lot of healing that's got to happen there as well. And, you know, dare I say it, forgiveness too. And I think that's going to be part of the path ahead. We have to be prepared to do that. And those of us, you know, who are secure enough to be able to have those uncomfortable conversations and you know, hold that with a heart of forgiveness, I think that's where we're going to be able to bring this conversation forward.
I agree with you. I really do. And I think I've always said it's the responsibility has been on people who saw through this entire madness the whole time to be vilified, to be, you know, debanked, to be face all these different consequences, losing family, losing friends for standing up for the truth. And now the responsibility is on us still to facilitate the heal. I mean, we've carried this weight the whole time. The weight hasn't gone, but I am pro-humanity and I'm pro approaching this with that view in mind. Councillor Slattin, please let people know about this hearing on Tuesday. Is it going to be publicly streamed, or is it something that they can go back and look at later? How do people find out more about this?
Well, our agenda papers are currently live on the website, and that's at wtc.tas.gov.au. If you want to go and have a look for our council papers, just see the agenda that I've put up, and there's also relevant attachments there, so other people can use those as a resource as well going forward. As far as our council meetings, being Tasmania, sometimes, you know, we're a little bit behind the times, but at our council, we actually have just started live recording ours, so there'll be an audio record that'll be available a few days afterwards. We don't live stream them, unfortunately, but I'm sure that'll come in the future. And there'll also be, you know, a record in the minutes, but it'll be the audio that'll be available and people will be able to go and listen to that a couple of days later. So that'll be on the same website. You'll be able to listen to proceedings, and I'll also post an outcome as well and let people know what's happened in Tasmania, because I'm sure whatever the decision is, it'll be an encouragement to people. I think one of the most powerful parts will be, you know, if the public come along and share their stories as well, because, you know, this is their opportunity to have their say.
Well, I just want to direct everyone to wtc.tas.gov.au. You can also follow Dr. Sladden at Dr. Julie Sladden on X. And that is where you can obviously keep up to date. And I suppose you have a Facebook page. I don't have that lined up right now, but let people know what that is.
That's Julie Sladden, West Tamer Councillor.
Wonderful.
So look for me. It's a public page somewhere or other.
Well, again, Dr. Sladden, I'm very, very grateful for you. Thank you for your initiative. Thank you for your willingness to come on and really reach out to the hearts of Australians. I am seeing a positive path forward, but we still have our work cut out for us. For example, the social media age ban. I know Senator Canavan's challenging this now. I see this as disastrous. There are still a lot of disastrous things in the works, but the environment certainly seems to be shifting, and no doubt people like you are helping the empower the Australian people. So we're grateful. Thank you.
I'm grateful for your work as well, and thanks for having me on, Maria.
Z Media is proud to partner with Aussie businesses that support freedom and believe in you and your family getting the best possible nutrition you can. Stockman Steaks is a third-generation family meat business supplying direct from freedom-loving Aussie farmers with pasture-raised, non-genetically modified, humanely raised local meat. Their meats are guaranteed mRNA-free. That's right, no mRNA in these grass-fed, antibiotic, hormone-free animals. By buying from Stockman Steaks, you'll be supporting Aussie farmers who share your values and are committed to giving you the best quality meat. Head to their store to see their delicious range of carefully selected meat boxes or create your own. Visit stockmansteaks.com.au/Maria. Support businesses that support us and give your family the nutrition they deserve.